we all have the capacity. I think that's the divine spark that God put in us, is this infinite possibility, you know, that you can transcend yourself again and again and again, and there's no limit upon who you can be or what you can become. I think that's the beautiful thing about being a human being. That's what God's gift to us was. I think they're terrified of what happens next. They're trying to control it and weaponize the cycle because they think they're going to come out of this cycle and start the next one in the same position. And I absolutely think that's false. You can't control God. You can't control nature. Nature would laugh at them and it'll swat them away like a fly.
Welcome to the Staying Free podcast. In this episode, I spoke with Parallel Mike. And this one is a special one for me because I actually went to visit Mike and his wife in Poland. So I've been doing a little bit of traveling around Europe. And I thought that while I was in Europe, I'd make the effort to go and see Mike. So this is the first time that I met Mike. And for those of you who have made friends in the past few years, perhaps online from sharing interests and sharing perspectives, I would definitely recommend meeting those people. Those friendships really do take on a different kind of character to them. And Mike is someone that I've been developing definitely a deeper friendship with over the past couple of years. For those of you who are new to the podcast, I actually first interviewed Mike in episode 31, and we just had a really great conversation. So I invited him back again for the Freedom Roundtable episode that I did, which was episode 44. And then again for episode 50, along with Seb Lee, and most recently again, just before Christmas for Freedom Roundtable round 2. So there's plenty of episodes with Mike for you guys to go and dig your teeth into if you are new to the podcast. And in this one, we go a little bit into some areas of Mike's past, which we didn't cover in the other episodes. And I really wanted to relate this to, you know, the experience that a lot of people are going through, in particular kind of finding courage and finding authenticity, and how this relates to going through struggle and whether we need to actually go through voluntary struggle in order to learn those lessons that it takes to actually walk an authentic path. So this is a fun conversation. It was definitely nice to have it in person. If you're already a subscriber to Parallel Mike's podcast, then you probably already come across this one because we decided that we put this podcast on both of our pod feeds. So since Mike beat me to releasing this one, you might have already heard it over there. So if you have, then you might want to skip this one. But we also did a part 2 for this episode, which Mike has released for his members. So if you want to get the rest of the conversation where Mike interviews me and I share a bit more of my perspective and my background, then head over to parallelmike.com and you can become a member there. All right, if you enjoyed the episode, make sure you give it a 5-star rating, whichever podcast app you're using. If you're new here, subscribe for future episodes. If you want to support the show, buy me a coffee, Bitcoin tips. You can do it both ways, just check the links in the description. You can also support the show and help me grow by listening on the Fountain app, which is available on iOS and Android. You can share your thoughts on the episode and simply say thanks by sending some sats with a comment. Getting started is super easy with Fountain. You can top up your Fountain wallet directly with a bank card or with any Lightning wallet if you're already into Bitcoin. And you can earn sats just by listening on Fountain and being an active member of the community. So you can use my code in the description for that if you want to start using Fountain today. And now for the comments that were left on the last episode. I actually got 3. I think this is a record for the number of comments I've got left on Fountain, so appreciate you guys leaving comments. Henry GQJ boosted 200 sats saying, thank you, keep up the good work. Thank you, Henry. Piers boosted 420 sats saying, love this episode. Always appreciate you boosting and leaving a comment, Piers. And Sorsner boosted 7,777 sats with a praying emoji. I think it's a praying emoji. I use it as a praying emoji. I know some people use it as a high five emoji. Praying emoji and a heart. So I appreciate your source note. I think that might even be a record for the number of sats I've got in a single comment. So massive thank you for that one. All right, that's enough for the intro. Appreciate everybody for their support as always. Now onto the episode with Parallel Mike. Mike, welcome to the Staying Free podcast.
And Johnny, welcome to the Parallel Mike podcast.
Yeah, so obviously, like, for the sake of my audience, understand what's going on here. We're currently in your studio, in your house, on your farm, and you've been kind enough to invite me and my girlfriend to stay here. So we decided we need to at least get away and do a recording in person, which we've never done before. Well, we've never met before, but excited to be actually doing this one-on-one. I always think that the conversations take on a bit of a different vibe when you do them in person versus over the internet. So happy to be here, man.
Yeah, this is the first time that I've ever done an audio like this where we've been in person. So I appreciate the offer to do it. It's exciting. And yeah, how was it coming to Poland and finding your way to our little corner of the country?
Yeah, I mean, it's really interesting. I've not seen this side of Poland before. I mean, I've only been here once generally, but getting here, I mean, I know you said that it was rural, but like, definitely for me, I didn't realize quite how rural it was going to be. And coming on that train and just kind of having fewer and fewer houses, and then at certain points just seeing no houses for long stretches of time, Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You know, you are seriously like living that that rural life out here. You know, it's no kind of exaggeration to say you are properly out in the sticks. So yeah, it's really great. I guess, like, first of all, before we dive into this, because you know, some people might not have already been introduced to you on my podcast. They might not have heard the previous episodes. So do you want to just kind of give a bit of a brief introduction for those kind of newcomers as to who you are and what you're about?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Mike, or Parallel Mike is kind of my online moniker, which you actually came up with, believe it or not. The first ever interview I did as a content creator, I started a YouTube channel and I got a message from a guy called Johnny Hoddle, and he said, "Do you want to be on my show?" And it was literally the first time anyone had asked me to interview. And you titled the episode with my name as Parallel Mike. And that's because that was my Twitter handle. And you thought that's what I called myself, but I didn't. And yet now that's what everyone knows me as. So yeah, I guess you can call me Parallel Mike. I'm an investor. I'm an organic farmer. Although my backstory is quite different to that. I was from the UK and most of my career was actually spent in counseling and therapy. So I worked with children from broken homes, from abusive situations, who had been harmed, who were in foster care. And yeah, that was my entire life, really. So I'd say I did that for about 14 years, because I had a few years at university and volunteering, and then went on to do that as a career. I was also an athlete for quite a few years. So I was pursuing ultramarathon running, and I was pretty talented at that. I got really good really quick, and I thought that would be my future and that was going to be where I went to. But yeah, I ended up getting injured, so that kind of dream was took away. And then at some point I decided, you know, I'm sick of being poor. And not because I wanted material wealth as such, but I met a great woman and we kind of built our vision of a future, and we decided, you know, we want to go back to nature. We want to live a life that's more pure, something that feels in line with our principles and values, get out of the city. And, you know, my career was tough work. I wouldn't say it was getting me down. I really found it rewarding and beautiful, but it was you saw the worst of humanity and the best of humanity in the same day. You know, you could hear about some of the most tragic situations, but then also see kids triumph over those situations and see this tremendous courage. But it was definitely one of those careers that was difficult. The places I worked for were often difficult. There was a lot of corruption and people who were not in it for the right reasons. So we decided on our future. We understood what was coming as well down the pipeline. I'd always had a very good kind of intuitive knowledge as to where the world was heading. But I realized that financially we was just broke. We'd both had our careers. I'd pursued what was meaningful in life. My career was meaningful. My running was meaningful. And I found it very spiritually rewarding to do those things. But financially, you know, it just wasn't something that was on my agenda or radar. So I decided I was going to figure it out, Johnny. I thought if these guys in suits who seem to have no character, if they can do it and I could change my life as I have done multiple times in my life, I thought I've got the drive and I've got enough IQ. I'm not super smart, but I'm kind of at the average level. And I thought, you know, average can do a lot if you work really, really hard. You know, if I put in twice as much effort, maybe I can achieve something that someone far smarter could achieve. And that's what I did. And I started to learn how to save and invest. And we moved on to a tiny little boat. It was 8 feet. And that's where we stayed for the next 4.5 years whilst I just consumed everything I could when it came to finance, investing, cycles, monetary history. Then I started to invest our own money. We started off without a penny. And the dream was always to simply accumulate enough wealth so we could live simply, you know. And that's not easy to do in this world. They want you to live in a very complex and confusing world, where we actually wanted to go back to land. And you're here now where that dream manifested. So that was the end of the journey. That was maybe 8-9 years ago. We did buy that farm and I did figure it out. And now I advise people professionally in terms of wealth preservation, getting ready for the coming financial disturbances and turmoil that I see and foresee, and I think you do too. And I also have a podcast, the Parallel Mike podcast, and the Parallel Systems broadcast YouTube channel, which is more towards the finance. And that's how we met, and that's the shortest I can give you on that story, because it's quite a long one.
Well, that was great. It's actually you're very well perfected at telling that, I think.
That was actually the first time, Johnny, I've ever told that story like that. So I'm glad it came out well.
Well, you nailed it. You nailed it. But, you know, as I said to you before, kind of starting this, we were saying, okay, you know, we've had a few conversations in the past and we've talked about different things. We've talked about, you know, finance, you know, like in our first conversation that we had, I brought you on because I saw a video that you'd done about, you know, the housing market crash and everything like that. And you were literally in front of a whiteboard, you know, kind of talking about like the cycles of kind of money printing that we were in and inflation and kind of where to expect house prices. And I kind of went into that conversation wanting to talk about that topic and thinking, okay, this is an interesting thing for my audience. This is what I want to talk about. But, you know, the kind of podcast has progressed since then and the themes that I talk about have progressed. And I think that the mentality of people has progressed and the kind of direction of the movement, you know, that we're kind of both a part of, that I like to call the freedom movement. I know that you, you know, a little bit cautious to give it a name, but, you know, obviously like we've been kind of talking about those kind of issues previously. But one thing that I don't think that I've gone into in a great deal of depth in our episodes, which is something that I know you talk about a lot on your podcasts, especially in your live streams, is just that kind of personal story for you of what's formed you into the character that you are today. Because, you know, I think that you're a very, very interesting person, especially from the angle of your ability to kind of go against the grain and to kind of make very big decisions in your life that most people wouldn't make and that most people would be afraid to make because you're kind of stepping very much outside of the mold. And when I kind of first started this podcast, I think a lot of people related to that because we were going through the whole kind of COVID situation where a lot of people felt like they were in a situation where they didn't want to go along with the crowd and they felt a real compulsion to step outside of the crowd. And I think that since that, those people, and I would definitely include myself in this category, actually have felt, okay, I want to go more in that direction. I want to kind of, I want to learn more about that aspect of my own psyche. And, you know, how far do I take that? How much of a kind of contrarian do I become? How far outside the norms of society do I step? Is it just the COVID thing? Do I just reject, you know, things like the kind of medical tyranny we've seen? Do I just, you know, reject the traditional kind of debt paradigm that they want us to kind of go towards? Like, how far does that go? And I definitely think that you're someone who has taken a lot of steps in your life, you know, from like you mentioned here, living on a boat, you know, moving on to a farm, like the way that you invest and things like this. You are definitely a very, very independent thinker. And I kind of want to go into the personal journey of what that's about. And I guess starting with your kind of more like formative experiences, you know, I'm not sure how much you've like specifically reflected on this, because sometimes you have these traits and you just think, well, you know, that's just the way I am, that's just my character. But I'm presuming there's been kind of like moments in your life that have shaped you into that kind of person who does make those kind of contrarian decisions and take the contrarian actions. So yeah, I guess like just to throw that over to you very broadly, like why is it that you have been able to have the kind of courage to take action in your life that is so different to what society expects of you? How have you been able to kind of step outside the matrix? How do you find the courage and the ability like within yourself to do that?
Well, I guess I had a very top heavy life. So the first 20 years, I'd say, of my life were very, very filled with, I don't want to say chaos, but difficulties, obstacles, lots and lots of barriers. So without dwelling on it too much, just purely giving what's useful, I grew up the son of a very well-known British gangster. So he was very high up in organized crime. So my dad ended up getting sent to jail for what at the time was the largest ever smuggle of cannabis resin to the UK. So I think it's about $40 million worth in today's money, inflation adjusted. Back then it was maybe 20 million. So it was pretty big. And it was an international gang of high-ranking figures across Europe who had come together, set up this big job, and then they ended up getting caught whilst doing that. So that really turned what was already, I wouldn't say an abnormal childhood, but at the time it felt normal to me. It was my homeostasis, but that flipped everything on its head. Now, I say it wasn't normal because when you're younger, you think your childhood's normal. You've got no comparison. But as I got older and I became a teenager and I realized that my childhood was actually very strange because of my dad, like the people and situations and experiences I was having were not normal, you know, being around somebody who was that well-known, like going into any situation and all of a sudden countless like 20, 30 people coming across wanting to shake hands with him and wanting to be in that presence of he's the man, you know, he's the big dog here. he was loved. He was like Robin Hood. Like, everyone wanted to be around him. But also, you know, these people who get into those positions have certain traits too. Very, very dominant characters and capable of anger and fits of rage. So I grew up and saw those things too. So I think when my dad got sent to jail, that really ended the childhood. Like, he wasn't a child anymore. I was maybe about 10, 11. I got kicked out of school the year after. Completely lost my way because I had no male role model now. And everyone knew who I was, that I was his son. It was front page of the paper. So, like, there was no hiding it. And I was completely, like, embarrassed and ashamed. And, you know, I was quite an introvert by nature. But I was also somebody who was reactive. So, you know, if some kids were picking on me or laughing at me about something, even though I couldn't fight, I'd be like, I'm just going to launch myself at them and would get into a scrap. And in the end, I got kicked out of school. I was out of school for a couple of years. Then the school I went back to was just a nightmare. It was like the worst school in the city or one of them. It was a dangerous place. You know, when you might think, well, how can schools be dangerous? It was like violence daily. There were some nasty, nasty kids there. You know, I remember a gang of kids at my school crippled a guy. You know, they attacked another kid's father who owned a restaurant. One night they was outside his takeaway and he came out, and this gang from our school, they beat him so badly, they put him in a wheelchair for life. They actually left him in a bin, you know, and he was crippled. So it's a dangerous place. That's the kind of stuff I'm talking about when I say dangerous. So you just didn't want to be there. So I didn't. You know, I used to skip school every day. I think I had about 20% attendance. And when I left that school, I had nothing, like no qualifications. No, I'd been effectively been out of school for like 3 or 4 years. And my home life was no good. Like, I didn't get on with my stepdad. That caused problems between me and my mum. So I didn't really get on with her. I never had really any support or encouragement growing up. And yeah, it was just difficult. So I left, you know, I left home. And then I guess that's like the formative experience where I realized very early on that I am pretty much alone here. So I need to, if I'm going to figure something out, it's going to be on my own back. Now, I didn't figure it out for a while. And I went down a terrible path, but just I was heading towards a catastrophe in life. You know, I was not doing the right things. I was trying to tune out of life. I was smoking a lot of weed. I was drinking alcohol. The crowd that I was with got worse and worse, you know, because as other people go off to do stuff, they go off to college. I didn't. They're going off to university or whatever. And I'm just kind of not. But funnily enough, I did find myself in college eventually. I actually went with a friend to an open day. She was going to take a course. And she said, you know, do you want to come and wait for me while I go to see this open day? So I was, sure. So I was sat in the canteen. And I can't really paint a good vision of myself back then. I had my hood up, a hat on, kind of like hiding in myself, listening to punk rock music, headphones in. And then this guy comes and sits opposite me. And I was, like I said, I was an extreme introvert back then and certainly not somebody who liked attention. And this guy comes and sits across me, and he was a very strange looking guy. He was older than me for sure. He was about maybe 20, 30 years older than me, maybe 20. He had this crazy ginger, like wild hair, like a fox that had been ravaging through the woods. It was like coming out on all angles. He was very skinny, really smartly dressed. He had like kind of skinny jeans and a suit, really nice pin tie. And he started talking to me, and I was like, what's he want? Like, and I thought he must be a student because of his style. Like, he did have quite a cool style. And he asked me about myself, which was interesting. That was his opening. He said, what are you doing here? I said, well, I'm just waiting for a friend. He said, what are you listening to? That was his first question. And I think it was Green Day, the band. And he said, oh, I used to like Green Day. So I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, and then that was his kind of open. And then he asked what I was doing there. And he said, nothing. I'm just waiting for a friend. She's come for the open day. And he said, what about you? He said, what's your plans? He said, are you coming to college? I said, no. He said, oh, so what are you going to do? Do you have a job? I was like, no. So he said, what about, you know, what you're doing then? So I said, nothing. He said, well, what's your plans like for the future? What do you want to be? I said, nothing. And what do you mean, nothing? I was like, what do you mean? I was like, what do you mean I should have a plan? What do you mean I should have a future? He said, well, what are you good at? I was like, I'm not good at anything. And I was like, listen, he said, I said, a skateboard and I hang out with my friends. But he said, I don't really have any vision of the future. So, like, I could see he was a little bit taken aback by it. And he said, well, he said, why don't you come to college then? I said, listen, I haven't been to school for like 4 years. I said, I'm not clever enough for college. I've got no qualifications. Mm-hmm. He said, you don't need qualifications. I said, yeah, you do. I said, of course you do, to get into college. I said, all my friends had to get A-levels. He said, no. He said, there's a course you can do where you don't need any qualifications. And I said, yeah, but I said, listen, it's not for me, buddy. He said, I'm the teacher. He said, I'll be there. He said, come on, it's art. Anyone can draw. He said, come to my class. He said, just give it a try. He said, I'll do the form with you now. He said, it starts in 2 weeks. He said, just come to that first one, see what you think of it. He said, listen, I'll even bring some of my punk CDs. If you like punk music, he said, I'll play them in the lesson. So that was it. So that got the hook in me, and I decided, okay, I signed the form out, and I thought, I'm not going to do it. Like, I'll just shut the guy up. Anyways, I did do it, and I ended up sticking that course out, and that's a long story short, but this guy really got me through that year. I was very self-critical. I used to do my artwork. I mean, literally towards the end of that year, I dragged myself through it. My attendance was shocking. I used to come in drunk. I used to come in stoned. He'd always mark me on the register as though I was there because they threatened to kick me out for low attendance. So he just started, in the end, he just said, Mike, if I can't make you be here, I'm just going to lie that you was here and tick those boxes. But he said, as long as you do the work, Mike, he said, I'll bail you out and I'll make sure it's fine. And he did. But towards the end, I was so self-critical. I threw my entire year's work in the bin and left one day in a big start mood. I was like, I can't draw, I'm shit at this. I threw it all away and I came back and he took it out and he'd neatened it all up. He'd ironed the damn stuff.
Wow.
So he really was the first person to ever stick their neck out for me in life. And he was actually the first person to ever tell me that I was good at something. The first person to ever say that he was proud of me or that I could be something. And although I didn't believe him at the time because I had very low self-esteem, very insecure, he made sure I finished that course, and I did finish it. And that had a profound impact on me because all of a sudden I realized that I'm not dumb. Like, I can do something. There is something within me. And I thought, I didn't start exploring it right away. I had a lot of demons and stuff to work out, but I'd say fast forward a few years and that kind of shifted something in me, and I did go back to university. I decided I was going to go to university. I finished my qualifications. I got involved in sports. I became a boxer. I give up all alcohol and smoking and all that stuff. And that was like kind of the start of my journey into becoming something else. But I wouldn't say it was the end of difficulties. You know, I had a difficult 20s and all kinds of stuff happened along the way, but it certainly, had it not been for him, I would be not be here now. I'd be somewhere else, and it probably would be similar to where my dad ended up, like prison, or, you know, who knows what I'd have become. But that really helped me meeting this guy. So
yeah, so it sounds like, you know, you had about as big of a transition as you could possibly have. You know, you went from literally having no belief in yourself, no dreams, no aspirations, to suddenly being like, well, I say suddenly, it's not a sudden process. It's a gradual process. And through the help of this person who seemed like a big mentor in your life, to actually kind of changing that around. And then do you think that is the case for like anyone? Do you think anyone can have that? Because, you know, we talk like now, you know, sometimes maybe a bit disparagingly in the freedom community about like, you know, NPCs and people who don't kind of like, people who just kind of go with the flow and don't have any ability to kind of like critically think and to kind of reason and follow their own personal convictions. And sometimes I think like, okay, I know, you know, sometimes seems unfair to say that, but it's like, does anyone have the ability to kind of like wake up and to kind of like find their passion and find their aspirations and to kind of follow through in their convictions? Like, do you think anyone can do it? Because I know obviously you ended up becoming a counselor and things like that. And I'm wondering whether that's because you thought, well, this is a process anyone can go through. Anyone can find this.
Yeah, I think we all have the capacity. I think that's the divine spark that God put in us, is this infinite possibility, you know, that you can transcend yourself again and again and again. And there's no limit upon who you can be or what you can become. I think that's the beautiful thing about being a human being. That's what God's gift to us was, that you can become anything, including a horrible asshole. You know, you can be the worst of the worst or the best of the best. That's true free will. That's freedom. You know, people talk about wanting freedom, and yet then they lament that some people use that freedom for bad. And they say, why would God allow that? And we say, okay, well, let's have everyone be good. Let's create utopia and force people to behave in a certain way. Well, that's totalitarianism. That's exactly the same thing that they're promising us right now. We'll fix it all. We'll make everything perfect and there'll be no sadness or bad stuff ever again. No, you have to accept both sides of duality. If you want free will, if you want freedom, then anyone's capable of anything. And I think that's open for anyone. That's on the table for you, for you, for me. But a lot of people are terrified of freedom, Johnny, because freedom has the capacity to go wrong. It can be that what I just said, you mess up, you don't get it right. It puts all the onus onto you. All the responsibility is now on your shoulders, whether it works out or not, you're responsible. And people don't want that because it scares the hell out of them. So they want someone else to come along and take that responsibility, even if it means that person could do things that are detrimental towards their future or mess up. They'd prefer that, the risk of that, than having the responsibility for themselves. And that's because to learn to bear responsibility, you have to build it like a muscle. You have to go through hardships. Now, I said my life was very top heavy. That forced me to either sink or swim. And I wouldn't say that's a good way to learn these things, because I had so many moments in my life where I was like so close to sinking, because what was being put on me or what life had thrown at me was too much really to bear. But fortunately, I always found a way through those moments, and therefore I took the strength of those moments. But I know so many people who didn't. They sunk in those moments because they didn't have the capacity right then to deal with it. So I would say the best thing we can all do is take on voluntary hardships, because then you can build it in a more measured way. And trust me, life will still throw hardships in too. There's no getting away from that, because we live in a world that's got duality, which means all experiences can be had. But if you learn to actually take on some of those things yourself, which is what I started to do through physical exercise, was the first thing. Like, how can I improve myself? It's a simple thing, but then it became something else. It was like, right, how can I transcend who I was before? So I'd time everything. Like, when I was training, I'd time everything and always try and beat the past time, or you know. And eventually I went into ultra running, which is like a different later on in my life. But I think anyone has the capacity to improve that ability to bear responsibility, but it really does take a desire. You have to want it, you know, and you have to maybe suffer a little bit and see the consequences of absconding from responsibility. Now, I think what's happened recently with people is some people who gave up responsibility to these people promising them safety and promising them that they would take away the scary stuff, some of those people, that one time is all they got. They failed on that one time, and it's going to have forever consequences because some of those people don't even exist anymore. But there's many others who maybe got it wrong in that decision, and they've got a reprieve. They've got a second chance, and they've got the capacity now to reflect and say, look how close I was to sinking. And if I fall for that again, if I hand over my responsibility for thinking and critical thought again, then that could be the end of me. And hopefully, I mean, maybe that's going to be what wakes some people up and spares them on to taking that path. But yeah, I think there's many people, Johnny, who are destined not to do that. And that's just the way it is. You know, we can't have not everyone's going to be able to achieve that. And I just accept that, you know, and I hope that I can always repeat that and continue to take that responsibility. And that's what I strive to do. And I leave the door open for anyone to learn from me or join me on that path, you know, as a peer like you. You know, we've come together as friends and now we speak about these things like this. And if either of us was ever struggling, I'd hope the other one would step in and say, listen, let's recommit to this journey, what we're on this path. But yeah, I think anyone's got the capacity, but I don't think I don't think everyone's destined for that. I think there's a lot of people who have to tragically fall by the wayside, and it will ultimately be those who have took the responsibility, who have the best chance of making it to the next chapter of whatever this is, wherever we are in this realm, wherever it's going, it's going to happen anyways. There's no stopping it. These transitions are so big, these cycles are so huge, that we just have to always get to that next level and, you know, and see what happens. That's the I'm excited about that. Like, yeah. I embrace all of it. Like, I embrace all of the risk and all of the reward together.
Well, yeah, I think that you know, probably the reason is because you have some kind of a concept of something higher, something bigger than this. I actually think that a lot of these things that we're talking about, and people who are afraid to, you know, kind of step out of the mold and to say, okay, I'm going to, you know, make a decision and do something in my life that goes against the kind of well-trodden paths of society, a lot of the time the reason not to take that, I think, might be because you have a certain amount of nihilism. Like, and I think that I've had this in the past. I think that I've been somewhat nihilistic, and it stopped me from kind of like following an authentic path and doing things that are stepping outside of the mold. And, you know, for me, and I think it's the case for a lot of people, COVID was a big watershed moment where it was like, okay, I really like, you know, I feel such a strong sense of aversion to this that I have to stand with my convictions. And then since that process, I've been thinking, okay, I've got like, where else can I apply this? Like, you know, like where else can in my life am I avoiding like the authentic path? And I think a part of all of this, you know, is just like, why should I put such an importance on fitting in with society? Once you've kind of stepped out of it, you realize that your addiction to it was kind of irrational, and you just think, okay, like, why was I doing that? And I think that's something that we've both gone through. And, you know, you mentioned cycles just then when you were talking, and I think that, like, we are going through this kind of new cycle now. And, you know, we talked about this a bit earlier, so I might want to get into this a little bit with you. But, you know, we're going into this new cycle where I think that you're having a kind of changing of the guard moment. And I think that, like, all this stuff that we're talking about here is really, really relevant to that. You know, I've talked a few times on my podcast about the idea that, like, in the past, we had, as a part of kind of the nature of kind of growing up and moving into a new kind of like season, you know, a season being like a season of the age, you know, like going through kind of like childhood to adolescence to adulthood and stuff. And you had these kind of marked moments where you're expected to go through some kind of a initiation of some kind, you know, tribes do this and everything. And I kind of think that like this is something that everyone is faced with at multiple times during their life. Like you kind of have these like touches with that. And it's like, do you go into it and do you find the authenticity and do you kind of have the courage to kind of go through it, or do you avert it? And if you keep averting it, it will keep reemerging in your life. And this is something that you know, I found like personally in my life is that before COVID and before kind of like changing my life quite significantly around those years, like, you know, COVID was just, I guess, another step in a process that I've been going on for a little while, is I felt like I had these periods in my life that I was averting doing something that I really wanted to do because I was like trying to fit in with the mold. And it happened like several times for me. I had one time when I kind of like dropped out of university, and I had this period where, you know, I really felt like I should have done more with that, and I perhaps should have kind of like, you know, gone traveling or done something different and kind of like got myself out of the mold, and I didn't do it. And I kind of had another one like shortly after university. I was struggling to get a job, and, you know, maybe I could have like started a business or done something on my own, and I kind of like struggled with that for a little while. And then the kind of the first big touch for me was, I think, like going solo traveling. Like I made this decision, I said, you know, like, I know that it's not the done thing, but it just felt something really intrinsic to me that I felt like I was going to grow a lot as an individual from. And I went solo traveling. And I think that having had that experience, when it kind of then came to COVID, I felt like I'd grown as an individual. I felt like during that process, I actually grew up quite a lot. And I was like, okay, I'm willing to now stand on my own convictions. I've kind of got the mental fortitude necessary to actually kind of like approach this differently. And it sounds like maybe for you, going back to kind of your childhood and stuff, maybe that process was your father going to prison and feeling like, okay, I've got to learn to become an adult. You know, I've got to go through that process. And I, you know, I wonder whether like society should be kind of re-embracing these traditions that we previously had, and we should be recognizing it much more as like a necessary component, that you just say, okay, there needs to be this kind of suffering, whether you have that through, you know, travel, or, you know, in your case, sport seems like it was a big one, you know, like putting yourself through this voluntary suffering. Seems like that to me is part of this mix of ingredients. It's maybe not the only thing, but there's a mix of ingredients somewhere there, and some kind of like voluntary suffering, or perhaps it could come in an involuntary form, as, you know, with your father going to prison, something like that. But you don't have to have a big trauma in your life. You could kind of go into that voluntarily. But it seems like that's part of this kind of mix of ingredients, which gives people that mental fortitude to then say, okay, like, I'm going to kind of like grow from this. I'm going to actually stand on my own 2 feet and not just default to whatever the status is of society. Would you agree that that's like, seems to be part of that mix?
Yeah, I would. And, you know, I think a healthy society and a healthy world would be one in which people, where our children were brought up, and situations were given to them that would add these key pieces. So you talked about rites of passage there. I mean, what were rites of passage? It wasn't just about celebrating that you're a man. It was about challenging that boy or girl at that time in such a way that would see them transcend who they was before. Like, this is not just a celebration of who you are, it's showing you what you can do. Mm-hmm. You know, it was taking them to a new level. And all of that's being stripped. And what society tries to do now, what they've engineered, is a situation where we try to go to the weakest link and take everyone down to that weakest level rather than aspire for something stronger and better than what we are by adding challenges, by adding hardships, by having debates, by thinking about difficult things and doing difficult things with our body and with our mind. So that is the difference. It's the satanic inversion. It's going from aspirational to de-evolution. We're devolving into the worst versions of ourselves, the weakest, the most insecure, the most self-critical, and the most incapable of hearing criticism, which is the worst, I think. You know, it's that hypersensitivity that they've instilled in young people so that they can't even imagine anything other than what they accept. Like, any, if you've got a different opinion, we have to destroy you and it because it challenges me so much. And it's not just young people. It's been, you know, adults are just as guilty of it because we've allowed ourselves to be lulled into this dreamlike state where we just live our lives watching TV and believing Hollywood narratives and scripts and living our lives as though they are anything but the most beautiful and precious thing that there is. I mean, what is more precious than existence? That you are here in this place of ultimate opportunity where you can create anything and be anyone, and you can experience the most profound joy and the most profound sadness in the same lifetime. These opportunities are there for all of us, and yet what are we doing with that? We're sat there medicating ourselves and drinking ourselves to sleep, you know, watching just toxic mind garbage. You know, it's just these things they put on TV. And how many years, we spoke about it recently, me and my wife, and we said the average person watches, like, maybe, I think it's getting up to around 10 years. And I would imagine young people, if we calculated the amount of screens they watch in their lifetime, if we started with young people now, you're going to be talking maybe 20% of their life staring into a screen rather than looking out into this beautiful world, you know, where literally creation's all around us, this extraordinary thing what we've got, and also into each other's faces and to each other's eyes. You know, we're sat here now, and this is not like looking at a screen. When we see each other through a screen, that's one thing, but I can see, I can look you right in the eyes now. You know, that's a personal connection that we can have right here. And we can feel things this way, which we can't feel through the screen because we've got energetic qualities. You know, we can feel each other's energy. We're in that vicinity. So I think we've been weakened, and it's very sad. And I think we have to, in ourselves at least, we can take that responsibility and say, I'm going to add some challenges. I'm going to add some hardship. I'm going to do what's uncomfortable, because that's what it's about. We've all got, I mean, from what's comfortable for me and what's comfortable for you are two different things. Like, if I say, Johnny, go out for a 2-hour run, and you're used to running 4 hours, you'll, well, that's not cool. And it's not a problem, Mike.
4 minutes for me, Mike. Yeah.
Like, for me, for example, one of the most uncomfortable things is actually sitting still. Mm-hmm. I'm so, like, always on the go. I'm a very hot, I wouldn't say I can't relax, but even when I'm relaxing, I'm doing something. I'm occupying my mind with a book or with something on the screen or whatever. You know, if I'm working, I'm always on the damn screens, which I hate. But what I really struggle with is just sitting there and just listening and just being still in nature. You know, my way of experiencing nature was running in it. You know, I'll go out for 12-hour hikes in nature. I'll go run in it, but just sitting and being still. So that's my challenge. Now, for you, you might be fine with that. You might be able to do it for hours. So it's about getting out of your comfort zone, whatever that is. And we have to find opportunities to do that daily in different aspects of our life. It can't just be a one-dimensional thing. For example, maybe you struggle to speak to people. Maybe you struggle with communication. Well, you're going to have to put yourself in that situation. You're going to have to do it more. And I'll tell you one quick story. When I first met my wife, I'd been through an awful lot of different challenges and experiences in my life. And I always prided myself on not taking the easy route, by taking the challenging route and trying to always become a better version of myself. And I failed at it many times, but I was always trying. And when I first met my wife, there was one challenge in my life, right? One challenge that I'd never, ever undertaken. I'd always said, I'm not even going to bother with that one because I've got no desire to overcome it. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was a cop-out. Maybe that was me lying to myself. And it was flying on a plane. But when I met my wife, she was from a different country. And she said, well, you know, if you don't fly, you'll never meet my family. And I thought, okay, I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to figure it out. And that was actually very difficult for me. You know, I'd boxed, I'd been in the ring fighting, I'd run 100-kilometer races. I'd done all kinds of challenges, and I was always trying to do what was difficult, but I never wanted or cared to do that one, but I needed to do that. And so that's what I had to do. And, you know, in that first year, I flew 13 times, like just hammered it, just repeated. And I hate it, Johnny. And it's not like you'd sit and know, because I'm a stoic person by nature. So if you saw me on a plane, I'd look like anyone else. It's not like I'm sat there shivering and quaking. But there's just something about it that I really cannot stand. And I hate every second of it. But again, it was about challenging myself. So I did it. And, you know, what would I not have experienced had I not done it? You know, I got to meet my wife's family. I got to finally travel, see different countries, you know, and now I'm living in a different country, which would never have happened had I not had the chance to come here back and forth many times. So, you know, that's what I would say to anyone. It's not about looking at what you don't want. It's about what comes on the other side of that. And you never know what's in that box. It's like a mystery box. Like the moment you overcome those hardships, there's something waiting for you. You don't know what it is, but it's always something good, and it's always something worthwhile. And it could actually be something that takes your life on such a completely different track to where it would have gone. And that's what I've experienced time and time again. And I've worked with hundreds of children who have been through that same process because life threw them an awful hand. And for the ones who decided to lean into that and for whatever reason could find this great capacity that there was no way I would have had at their age. I mean, these were exceptional kids, although no one would have known that. You know, you would not know how exceptional these kids were just looking at them, but what they were dealing with and how they were managing it. And the ones that did come out, they came out the other side. They went on to do great things. You know, they went on to be helpers in society, people that were doing the kind of things that most adults would not be able to do. So yeah, I would say that's a key part of it is finding those difficult things and seeking them out and being very honest with oneself. Like, you know, am I avoiding something here? And is there something that I have hidden in my life, whether it's a psychological thing, whether it's a past experience you haven't confronted, whether it's an actual activity, public speaking, whatever it is, just put yourself in those difficult spots. And guess what? One challenge overcome leads to a new challenge, and they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And the next thing you know, you're taking on things that you never would have imagined you could do. You know, you're making podcasts, you're running your own business, you're an entrepreneur, you're building a family that's far, far stronger than the one you came from. And, you know, that's what life's about, in my opinion, is transcending what was.
Well, yeah, I think that this really links into kind of what I was going to say about the cycle stuff, because I really sense that right now we're kind of going through a cycle where people are having to come back into touch with having that kind of personal conviction and acting upon it. You know, I think that some people have been kind of thrust into it and maybe have been a bit kind of dragged kicking and screaming into this. But I think a lot of people now are having to come to this point of just saying, like, the old systems are no longer working. The old, you know, just kind of going along with the crowd, it's going to get you wrecked in some way or another. You know, whether that's that you take a medical intervention that you don't need, or whether that's that you know, take out a ridiculous mortgage you're never going to be able to pay and end up a debt slave. I think that the reasons are mounting every day to actually kind of like look outside of the confines of what society is telling you and say, okay, like, I need to do something a bit different. And that's why I think that these things are so kind of tied in together. You know, like, we're talking here on a podcast which is, you know, generally about like ideas of freedom and self-sovereignty and stuff, and we're talking about essentially kind of like personal development and all this kind of stuff. But I don't think by any means that this is it's not unrelated whatsoever. I actually think that they're intrinsically linked, because I think the two come together. And this kind of goes back to that old idea of, you know, like, hard times create strong men create weak times create I get this wrong every single time. Mike, help me out.
Yeah, it's hard times create strong men create good times. Good times create weak men, and weak men create hard times.
Okay, I will. One day I'm going to get that right. That's about the sixth attempt.
I think that's the first time I've ever got it right, by the way.
So. Oh, nice. Okay, so you struggle with this as well.
Yeah, I always simplify it, actually. I say hard times create strong men, and strong men create weak men, and weak men create hard times. So I kind of miss a little bit out.
You skip a bit. I understand it. But anyway, you know, I think that we hear that, and I think this is why we have to have conversations like this ultimately, because it's just like, well, you know, we're going through a time when we need to develop our own like character and our own convictions, because the psyops just keep on coming, and you have to ultimately develop the character to kind of overcome that. So I think that all these things are very like interrelated. I don't think that it's just an accident that we're talking about these ideas now about kind of developing on a personal level. At the same time, when we're going through all this stuff after COVID and like, you know, we're going into this kind of new world, I think that it's all very much related for me, and that these conversations like need to happen simultaneously. And I just want to pick you up on the stuff that you were saying about cycles earlier. Do you agree that we are going into that kind of cycle now? Do you agree that we're going into a different cycle, that somehow, and for whatever reason, we've come to the end of some kind of a status of the world, of like the mindset of society is now like kind of shifted, and we're going into this new thing where we need, you know, new ideas, new leaders, new people to, you know, not leaders in the sense of kind of, you know, telling people how to live, but I guess just kind of like guiding people, like kind of gentle guidance by people who have some kind of wisdom. Because I really think that that's becoming a big part of this. And I think people are beginning to listen as well. You know, like I don't think this conversation, for example, this would have been the weirdest conversation ever only a few years ago. And now I think that this conversation is becoming a bit more kind of like normalized. So yeah, I just want to kind of get your idea on that, and just generally about kind of cycles, some of the stuff that we were discussing earlier.
Yeah, I think what's happening right now is that we're coming to the end of some really, really big cycles. So these are cycles that transcend many generations, and we haven't seen that before. We haven't lived through these big cycle endings, and yet many people throughout history have, and we've lost touch with those histories. But if you know where to look, you can find examples of them. And we spoke a lot today about the Mayans, because you're living in Mexico, your girlfriend's from Mexico, and you've got access to this history, and yet nobody really speaks about that history from anything other than a curiosity, like, oh, they built these pyramids and they did these things. And yet many, many past civilizations went through catastrophes and cataclysms and changes that were profound, in that they shaped the world forever. Everything changed after that. I think that's where we are today. I think that's exactly what is happening. And we spoke today about how some of these cycles, or how I feel some of these cycles, are being weaponized. And I spoke about the solar cycle, which is the 11-year cycle where the sun goes from maximum sunspot activity to minimum sunspot activity. It's like a swing between the two. And during the maximums, which is at the peak of the cycle, people become much more excitable and they're much more inclined to go out and do very vigorous things. And if you look back over the past 2,000 years, 80%, Johnny, of all wars and social revolutions have happened at the peak of sunspot activity. That's no coincidence. That shows you the profound impact of the sun. The moon has similar impacts. I spoke to you earlier when you were asking about my dogs. You said, did they come in? And I said, no, they come in the house sometimes, but not when there's a full moon. And you asked why. And I said, because they bark at the moon. They howl. They get very excitable. My big dog, Yulka, will spend the entire night during a full moon or in the day before just running around at night barking. This is every month. These are energies that we're feeling. Now, if that's just the sun and the moon, what's happening when we have this sun going through the precession of the equinoxes? That's a 24,500-year cycle, Johnny, where the sun goes from through each of the houses. You know, we have these things that we call horoscopes, and it's being belittled into this kind of novelty where it's just about reading a horoscope, finding out what's going to happen in the future. And yet all of the ancients built giant monoliths to chart these sky movements. They wanted to know precisely where the sun was, precisely where the stars were going, and which house we was in. That's because it meant something. That's because things happened during the changing of the guard as these cycles switched from one to the other. Why does the Vatican own the most powerful telescopes in the world? Why do people like King Charles and the royal families all have royal astrologers? You know, they know it matters. It was JP Morgan who said, millionaires don't use astrologers, but billionaires do. Yeah. And today he'd say trillionaires. Those are quotes because these people understand that there are profound shifts in energies that happen. Now, their role, what they're trying to do, is to try to harness those energies for self-gain, but also to weaponize them against us. So if you knew, for example, that at the peak of the solar cycle, people become more excitable. Well, if you wanted to get the world to go into a state of war, you do that going into the peak of a solar cycle. Well, guess what? The peak starts around 2024, 2025, and we're seeing a lot of war right now. Now, at the minimum, the solar minimum, what you see during those times is people become more insular. It's kind of like in winter where people get seasonal affective disorder. We all feel some of it. We don't have as much sun and we want to spend more time indoors. We don't feel as energetic. It's the opposite effect. It's the lunar side of it. The moon is the energetic, the conscious, the forward moving, and the lunar is the subconscious. It's the meditative. It's the subversive. It's the hidden. Well, when did they have this whole COVID scandemic? It was right at the bottom of the solar cycle when we had the least amount of sunspot activity, where people were naturally going to be predisposed to feeling those ways. So I absolutely think they understand these cycles. Now, we're just talking about an 11-year rolling cycle, Johnny, but I can zoom it even further in. If you look at the S&P 500 or the silver markets and you see how they move going into a full moon, and away from a full moon, you can literally trade that cycle. And I've got charts that I've shared with my patrons where an entire year, if you traded the lunar cycle in silver, you had 100% gain that year and no loss. If you bought going into the full moon and sold going out of it, it was accurate for 100%. That's 12 months of the year. These cycles are powerful, but nobody talks about them anymore because we've poo-pooed it all and we live in this materialistic world where everything's science-based. Now, I think the cycle, what we're actually living through right now, is the culmination of huge cycles. And the Indians called these things like the Yuga cycle, which is a 24, 25,000 year cycle where you go from the Iron Age to the Bronze Age to the Silver Age to the fabled Golden Age, which is where we're all sparking. Our consciousness is completely open. We're all living in this harmonious world. We're going towards this one project. Well, we're not there, unfortunately. We're actually in the lowest age, the Iron Age. But we are actually now changing from the iron to the bronze. If you look at the astrological age that we're in, we're moving from the Piscean age to the age of Aquarius, which is that fabled age again, you know, the dawning of the age. Well, that's the one. That's where we're going to. And again, that's meant to be a time where we have our consciousness awakened and people become more spiritual and less materialistic, like less focused on money and mammon and greed. But there is a big but. During some of these transitions, we can have cataclysms and we can have times where we go through all manner of things where lots of people fall by the wayside. And I mean, maybe 60, 70, 80% of the world just go. And that sounds extreme, but these have actually happened in our recent history. I think it was like 70% of people in Europe, 70% of the population was lost in the early 1500s during the Black Death, which many people believe was not something that was created naturally. It was again something that was engineered. But whether it was or it wasn't, we lost 2/3 of the European population. And people don't even class that as a cataclysm. What we're talking about is things like the Great Flood or past meteors that came down and wiped out huge swaths of the civilization. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's what we're going to, but there are people out there who understand a lot about certain cycles, like the Indian cycles, and they believe that that's what's happening. And I've heard that from multiple different belief structures. So it's not just people, you know, it's not just coming from one area, it's coming from many different areas. And when you look around and when you hear what the elites are planning, they openly say, or many of them have said, and we saw the Georgia Guidestones, that they want that to happen. And look what's happening now. There's these vaccines, there's these all these things happening. So again, do they understand something's about to happen? Are they trying to speed it up? Are they trying to aid it? I don't know, but I do think there are huge cycles in play. And I think we're living through a time where many people are going to fall by the wayside. And I think the ones that are going to make it through this really difficult next 20, 30 years are the ones who are striving to survive and taking responsibility. And even then, who knows? Like, we have no guarantees in life. But I think if you want to make it through this next part of this cycle, you have to really want it. You have to be living in the present and taking the responsibility for making the right decisions and trying to fight through this one and not lamenting it. Like, there's no point in us sitting here and talking for the next 2 hours about how it all sucks and, oh, these people are awful. Look what they're going to do to us. Like, that's not going to help either. Just accept where we are. Accept that there's energies in play that are far, far greater than us. Like, we can't control that, and we can't control what anyone does, all these people that supposedly have a lot of power. We can't control them either. And I think the cycle's going to swat them away like a fly, Johnny. They think they're in control. They think they're going to control this next turning of the cycle. They're wrong. You can't control God. You can't control nature. Nature would laugh at them, and it'll swat them away like a fly. So they're in it too. I think they're terrified of what happens next. They're trying to control it and weaponize the cycle because they think they're going to come out of this cycle and start the next one in the same position. And I absolutely think that's false. They're not going to. They're in the same boat as us, and this boat's sinking. So you build your life raft. You better start making your own life raft, because there is a storm coming, and it's going to be, it could be a cataclysm. It could be something natural, could be something unnatural. I don't know. But I think we all feel the change. We are seeing people awaken as well, and they're terrified of this. They know that that's happening. They're seeing every day that their numbers of people following their script are falling. That's not happening to us. Do you know anyone that's gone from our side back to the old side?
No, exactly. You know, interestingly, you were talking then, and I actually just noticed, you know, you mentioning about kind of cycles, and you were talking about, you know, like they're afraid that people are going to awaken. And it kind of got me really thinking, like, essentially what we're talking about here is stuff that's happening on the micro level, which can also be observed as happening like on the macro level, right? Like you can bring this right down to like a day in someone's life. You wake up, like that's the awaken moment, right? You wake up in the morning, then you go through, you have your morning. It's when you're most energized. That's like this kind of spring season, right? You know, it's similar to the seasons that happen over the course of a year. You've kind of got the waking up. So that's the spring, getting up in the morning, etc. You go into the middle of the day. It's the warmest period, it's the middle of the day. The summer is the warmest period, it's in the middle of the year. And then you go kind of like later in the day, that's kind of like you're starting to, your energy is starting to lower, you know, it's starting to get cooler, etc. That's kind of like the autumn. And then you have the winter. So that's happening, you know, through the course of a day. You've kind of got your, you know, your morning to the night is like going through the four seasons. And also with the human energy is like that. And then when you go to sleep and, you know, like you're tired in the evening, you wake up in the next morning, that's your awakening. And this is happening on a day, it's happening through the seasons throughout the course of a year, but it's also happening over bigger time periods than that aren't observable necessarily in a human lifetime, but are observable through the course of multiple human lifetimes, right? So we can kind of look at these cycles and say, okay, I can observe what a day feels like. I know what it feels like with temperature. I know what it feels like energetically. I can observe also what happens in a year because within my lifetime. And maybe you can observe, you know, some kind of seasonality within the course of maybe 100 years. Perhaps you say, okay, well, when I was younger, you know, we had like it felt a certain way, or there was, you know, perhaps it was cooler, or perhaps it was warmer, etc. And then it was different in a different period of my life. But what happens to that seasonality over greater periods of time? What happens like when you're talking about through the course of multiple generations on a kind of, you know, 5,000 year basis or 10,000 year basis? I think that like that's the kind of stuff that you can only really conceptualize through kind of like reading and learning about what was life like, what was life like during these kind of like golden eras. Like, you know, I look at stuff like the Stoics and things like that, and I'm like, they were a different character. They were almost a different breed of human being. These people were so operating on a different level. And perhaps that's kind of what we're coming back into. But first we have to kind of face the winter season. And I think that, to me, it feels like that's what we're kind of going into, or perhaps in the middle of. I'm not entirely sure where we are there, but I think that like kind of COVID was a real like watershed moment that felt like a real change. You know, perhaps that was the brewing of a storm, or perhaps that was the storm itself. And now you're kind of starting to see the sprouting of new seeds of kind of consciousness in a way. In my view, I think that we're starting to go into the spring. Like we're actually past the storm, or at least the first storm. Perhaps there will be more to come, but I see that we're kind of like starting to go into a bit of like a new like seasonality, like I guess just energetically in the world. And that's why I think this is like a really important time. And like, you know, even though sometimes I feel like, am I going crazy by like talking about this stuff? I think that like people like me and you can sense it. Perhaps other people are a bit more like unaware of it, or maybe think that we're talking crazy stuff. But I definitely sense that we're going through the changing of a kind of like a cycle or a season that's happening on a kind of like really large level, that if you're in tune with yourself, you can kind of sense it, but it's kind of hard. It's not immediately obvious, and you have to kind of really think quite deeply about it, meditate deeply about it to really feel it out. And yeah, I guess just throwing that over to you, like not really a question specifically, but just what do you think about those kind of ideas generally?
Well, I would say what I've experienced the past few years is an amazing amount of synchronicities that just keep unfolding again and again and again, just absolutely unreal synchronicities that defy logic and maybe belief. And I've had that in my life throughout my life. I've always been intuitive as a person, and I class intuitive knowledge as the most highest knowledge, because that's the ability to make sense of the world without all of the information. Like, you don't have to have all of the charts and the graphs and the figures and the numbers. Intuitive knowledge is where you just understand by default what you have to do. And most people betray that intuitive knowledge. They feel it. And we spoke about this earlier, people who said, I knew I shouldn't have taken it. I knew it was wrong. I felt wrong as I sat in the chair and I did it anyways. And I've done that in the past, Johnny. So I empathize with those people, because there's times in the past where I did something like that and I knew it was wrong and I knew I shouldn't have done it. And it turned out to be a huge mistake, you know. and I learned that I had to stop doing that, and I had to listen to that intuitive voice, and I had to nurture it, because it was a wisdom that it was a divine gift. It's somebody passing you knowledge without you even knowing where it's come from. So I really started to ferment that in my life and to focus on it and to allow myself to listen to that voice and trust it. And it's never, ever betrayed me. Never, ever once. Every time I've listened to that intuitive voice and it's told me, this is what you have to be doing now. And you don't know why you have to do it, but that's what you need to do, Mike. And I've listened to it. It's benefited my life no end. It doesn't mean it happens right away. Sometimes it takes you to an obstacle, but maybe that's the obstacle you have to face right then, because you need that strength for something that's coming further down the pipeline. So you have to go through it. It's like a process. And I think a lot of people have lost touch with divine intuition and their intuitive voice. And I'd say that's the first step for anyone who wants to make it through these cycles, these big cycles, is you have to learn to trust yourself once more. You have to filter out all of the noise, because that's what they're working at 100% of the time. 24/7, they want to fill your head with their voices, their lies, their deceptions, their manipulations. You have to first and foremost remove that shit from your life. Get rid of the TVs, get rid of the media. And I'm not saying we can do it 100%. Of course we can't, because we live in this very complex world where a lot of our lives have been transitioned online. So you have to cap that. And then you have to go back to things that are true, where you know there's no lie there. So for one, go for a walk in my forest outside. There's no lie in that. It's a forest. It's nature. It's there before we was here. Man has not messed with it or interfered with it. And if it has, nature's taken over anyways. So I say ground yourself in truth, and then take some time to listen to yourself. Like, once you've done that, go for that walk, then sit down and just think, listen to the birds, smell the smells, feel the ground, you know, feel it beneath your feet, grab some of that dirt in your hands, just touch things that are real, and then listen to your own voice and see what that is saying, because that's what they don't want you to do. Why are they so scared of you listening to yourself? Why are they so scared of you actually tuning into yourself? I'd say because it's not you that's speaking. I'd say there's something beyond you that's speaking to you, and they don't want you to connect with that. And I'm not sure where I'm going on this one, Johnny, but I think it's an important message as part of this discussion, is that intuitive part and getting back to that. And I think if you do that, you will be able to make it through this next phase. Because it's going to be confusing. It's going to be chaotic, like COVID was for many people. They didn't understand what was going on or why, but something inside told them, this isn't right, this is wrong, don't believe it. And I think you'll have many more of these different operations and agendas coming up. And I think you'll do much better to listen to yourself and your gut. Some people call it a gut instinct. I call it divine intuition. And I think you'll be much better focusing on that than focusing on the messaging that you've been given, because that, I can guarantee you, my friend, will be a lie.
Yeah, I actually think that's very, very, very strong advice. And it's something that I'm kind of like still learning, but I'm definitely kind of like leaning into it more and more, is actually just kind of feeling that out and feeling what your own, I hate saying like your own authentic truth is, because the truth is the truth. It's not your truth, but it's your perception of the truth. It's like, do you trust your own intuition and your own real experience of the world, or do you fall for the illusion and kind of go along with whatever the illusion is? And I think it's a difficult thing for people to do, is to kind of like follow their kind of authenticity. But I think it's like really crucial to finding, like, first of all, your own sense of purpose, but second of all, for freedom generally. Like, do you want to live a free life? Well, like, the first thing is kind of unshackle your mind, you know what I mean? Like, that's a really important part of the process. It's not just a matter of saying, okay, I'm going to free myself, you know, like financially or like physically, but it's like mentally as well. That's like a crucial part of the process. So, you know, this is something I'm talking about more and more. I know that, like, when we first started our conversation going back, like, it's very finance-based, this kind of stuff, but I feel like the conversation has kind of like evolved generally, and that's the kind of thing that I'm like more and more interested now. It's just to kind of really embrace this new cycle, if in fact we are going into it, which I think that we both like believe that we are, is like, how do you condition your mind for that? Or how do you recondition, or probably better to say decondition your mind for that. So yeah, I think that this is for me a really like interesting aspect of that conversation that's going on. I know that we said we're going to reserve some time to do a bit for your podcast, so if you want to like throw it over to me or switch spots, but I guess just to round things off from my side of things, I'll just let you lead it out with where people can find you and all the rest of it. I'm sure that most people are already aware of who you are from listening to my previous episodes, but just for those who's the first time hearing about you, do you want to just let them know where they can find you?
Yeah, well, I really appreciate it, Johnny. I appreciate you as a person. You was, like I said, the first person to put me on another podcast. I'd never done that before. God, you wouldn't believe how nervous I was for that show, you know, to be on it and to be asked questions that, you know, it's like, will I be able to answer them? Will I get them right or wrong? You know, it's a difficult thing when you first do it. And you gave me a lot of confidence. You know, you already had a podcast. I looked up to you. I admired your work. I thought, wow, this guy's awesome. He's producing his own podcast. I wasn't doing a podcast at the time. I was just literally putting out these random YouTube videos, and I think it was only the third or fourth video. It was Johnny, I think it might have been the second video I ever did. So I appreciate you for doing that one. You've been a key part of my journey in becoming somebody that can present information coherently and to do what I'm doing now. You know, you took a chance on me, I feel, anyway. So I really appreciate you. And the synchronicity is that we had, because when we first met, it turned out that you actually was very good friends with somebody who's in my family through marriage. And that was just an amazing synchronicity too. So I do feel like we're all being guided on our journeys and we was meant to meet. And that's why we're here together now. And what a beautiful thing that is. So thank you so much. You can find me on parallelmike.com. That's where you can find my podcast. You can also find my services. I do wealth preservation consultations. That's really my specialism, is helping people to protect their wealth going into, which is going to be a part of this cycle, Johnny, is a reset financially. That financial reset where we have a completely new monetary system on the other side of this is going to be part of a much bigger reset. So I help people figure that out. Also, for people that want to transform their lives in ways that maybe are daunting to them, so like what we did, moving to something more self-sufficient, where you have control over your food, your energy, your water. I think we're going to need that. I think that is part of this reset too. There's going to be a period of scarcity, but I believe we can all thrive through that. I always say, you know, build your ark like Noah, get ready for whatever comes next, and then thrive, you know, and embrace those challenges that are going to come, because that could be the making of you. The other place you can find me is Parallel Systems Broadcast on YouTube, and you'll find a lot of my financial content on there. I go quite deep into things like the legal system, property rights, and also just making sense of this Ponzi scheme that we all live in, you know. You're doing your thing to get through that, and you talk a lot about Bitcoin. I talk a lot about precious metals and land and real assets, and you know that's kind of part of what I do as well. So thanks so much for having me, and I look forward to speaking to you on my show in a second.
Yeah, I'll just round that off once more, Mike, by just saying, you know, thanks so much for inviting me into your podcast studio to do this one. It's been awesome, like doing an episode like in person like this has been great. But yeah, I echo completely that sentiment. You know, it's been really great kind of going on this journey together and kind of getting to know you more. And, you know, I genuinely think that you're just someone people should listen to. You're the kind of character that I think that we need in these times that we're going into, just your way of presenting information. And, you know, I genuinely think about this, like, you know, I was talking to someone on my podcast the other day, and they were talking about how someone that they knew, they felt like a lot of their things that happened to them in their life, it was almost like the film Slumdog Millionaire, you know, like where all these things happen and only in retrospect you realize it was all the right things to happen because you were needed at a certain time to, you know, you needed those experiences to kind of like form your character. And, you know, when I talk to you, I'm just like, this feels like what it was for you. I really feel like you're meant to be doing what you're doing now. I really think you have a way of connecting with people, and, you know, like even the experiences you've had in your past when it comes to, you know, kind of sport and hardship and also, of course, like, you know, being a counselor and stuff, I think has really kind of like led you to where you are now. And, you know, you're doing awesome work. So, yeah, I would just say keep doing what you're doing. You know, like people need voices like yours there. And I'm, you know, I'm really kind of happy. So it was a pleasure for me to kind of have you on back when you were kind of just getting started and stuff. It's been great to see your growth and stuff. So everyone, I would absolutely recommend check out Mike's podcast. And we'll do a little bit more for that one as well, which will be for Mike's podcast. It's even more reason to go over there and check out Mike's work as well. So yeah, thanks again, and see you in the next one.